If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow-wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Welcome to the latest edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. Another week in isolation, but another week closer to footy returning by the looks of it. My name is Lauren Wood. I'm joined, as I am each and every week, by John Anderson, Scott Gullen and Mick Warner. And Mick, there might be a bit of light at the end of the tunnel here.
Yeah, it does look like we'll be back sometime June, maybe. I'm still going for the 18th of June, Lauren, and I think it should be Richmond Collingwood. I had to laugh when I saw Melbourne Collingwood described as a blockbuster. Nothing against Melbourne. In fact, there just aren't going to be any blockbusters, are there? Because there's no crowds. But Richmond Collingwood would seem to me to be two of the better informed teams from round one and the premiers, and Collingwood, the history there. So I would go with that game.
Well, I know you'll be screaming at the TV either way, Scotty. He's obviously a staunch Richmond supporter. You sit next to Mick in the office. Doesn't look like we'll be back in the office anytime soon. But as I say, another week closer to footy being back. Can you feel the tide starting to rise a little bit?
Oh, yeah, finally. I mean, they're letting us play golf, Loz. So that's the first big step for our sanity. And following on from that is the football. And, yeah, I mean, like the AFL, I don't know why they always have to have commission meetings and drag these things out. I know there's issues with the interstate clubs, but it was good to hear Adam Simpson say, well, you know, we'll take a hit just to get the thing going. So I think, like, the footballers will be back at training this week and a bit of normality will start.
Well, obviously we could see the Eagles and the Dockers move over here to Victoria, and we'll get stuck into how footy might look a little bit later, but a few of them might have to hit the road just to get going.
Or you could see the Eagles and Dockers play round two in Perth, Loz, and just have local derbies all around the country. That's not, hasn't been raised, but it's not inconceivable that that would happen. Just buys them another week. And if those, with their draw, if those sides were to play each other twice, you could do it the first 2 weeks as well. Because it's strange times, strange things might happen. But that's a possibility.
Well, I think it's gone under the radar a bit to guys too, that the South Australian clubs, they could well be having to move to Victoria as well. We're still waiting to hear from the South Australian government where they'll allow the Power and the Crows to fly in and fly out. The Premier of South Australia said last Friday it was his preferred model, but the longer it goes, I think that's the delay with the AFL fixture as well. They don't know. We could have 14 teams based in Melbourne for the first part of the season.
Now, Mick, has this got political with your mate over in Western Australia, the Premier? Has he won a grand final or something by being so hardball against the AFL?
No, I think that they've got zero cases of COVID-19, as we call it now, COVID-16. COVID-16. And they just don't want to risk, you know, melting down their economy for a footy game. So, no, I think that's their right, Scotty.
Interesting. You'd think that the AFL would be able to pull in favours to find something, but no, they're standing their ground and it's going to hurt us all.
They're trying.
You mentioned the Crows there, Mick. Of course, the Adelaide Sixers. I see Scotty chuckling away immediately. Wet lettuce penalty. What sort of area of the fridge are we heading for the penalty, Scotty? Straight to the lettuce drawer with that one.
How many cos lettuce? Yeah, iceberg lettuce. Whatever lettuce you want to use. The old suspended sentence. Okay, so in these unusual times, when are these players ever going to re-offend a training restriction and get that one-game suspension? Come on. Adelaide have had a mare. Ben Hart, we heard Matthew Nix over the weekend basically say Ben Hart, which was alarm bells for me, wasn't anywhere near it. He was the only coach there. What else was he doing? Playing cards by himself in his room? So that was hard to believe. And now poor old Benny's copped the whole thing. And I was shocked. I mean, a big fine, draft picks were floated. I don't know what the real answer is, but what draft they came picks. Up
Give
with.
Give me a spell. Scotty, I am no fan of the AFL's integrity systems, as you know. But this seemed about right to me. I mean, what you know, it was an 8-minute kick around on a golf course. It wasn't
shouldn't be draft picks. So I agree with that. But well, the stupidity
of it. Fine a club. We're all $600 million in the hole. I mean, what else could they have done?
Well, they didn't do anything, Michael. That's the whole point.
Well, they did suspend Ben Hart for 6 weeks. And what would you have done to the Crows?
No, that's a very good point, Michael. And okay,
I'll rest my case for you.
I would argue there's something that they could have done differently, and that's probably not have had the song and dance for 3 days about how angry everyone was and that the penalties are going to be hefty and everyone brace yourselves. That's probably the one thing that could have been differently if that's what they were going to hand out. Because I think everyone was, you know, we've seen tweets from reporters, as you said, draft picks and $100,000 fines. I don't know whether money would have been the answer, but I think it was just sort of setting everyone up for, hey, this is going to be pretty hard.
Couldn't agree more with you, Loz. That really good organisations make quick, learned decisions, and too often with the AFL, it drags on for 2-3 days, which gives the whole thing too much airspace, puts more pressure back on themselves. I don't think most of us, and what Nick said before, I couldn't agree more with. Adelaide didn't deserve massive penalties for this. There's so many worse things happen. Ben Hart's copped it, so be it. It's not going to affect his life 6 weeks. Move on.
Are they the victims too, Mick, of that it's kind of just another black mark against the club after, you know, they've had the 3 years of horror. It was just sort of, you know, chalk it up, add it to the dossier of things that have gone wrong over the last few years. Like, why did it take so long to look into it and hand the penalty down after the golfers did their dibber-dobbing a few days earlier?
No, I agree with that. I've said this before. I think they're an arrogant club, the Adelaide Crows. They're the kings of South Australia. They cheated the salary cap. With the Tippett affair, we know about the camp. There was the Talia brothers scandal. So, you know, there's always these things following this club around. But when you look at the specifics of COVID-16, there wasn't a hell of a lot in it.
You can always count on our man, Scotty, for a nice little tagline for any sort of news.
Outstanding from him.
What about, let's stay in South Australia just for a minute for another story that sort of, I think, gathered more steam than, well, sort of got a second wind on the weekend, didn't it, with Port Adelaide chairman David Koch giving an incredible whack, Scotty, wasn't it, to Mick Malthouse after the Herald Sun story a few days prior regarding pulling out of China. I don't think anyone, let alone Mick, saw that coming from Koshy.
No, well, Koshy, you got to remember, he is a TV presenter, so the hyperbole, you know, his job is to put some mayonnaise on stuff to make it interesting. And he went, white Australia, et cetera, et cetera. That was extraordinary. And for the topic, it didn't deserve the outrage, clearly. And, you know, and saying Mick Malthouse is a racist, you know, we've had Andrew Cracker come on Twitter and say, I played under Mick. He's done a lot for the Indigenous. It was a nothing story that became big because Koch overreacted. And I still and flabbergasted why he used that terminology.
Does Mick deserve an apology, Ando?
You should, of course he deserves an apology. When I first read that, I thought that's libelous because Mick Malthouse has, I don't know what age Mick is, what's he, he's mid to late, probably late 60s. He's built up credibility and his reputation over a long period of time, and that has smeared his reputation by suggesting that Mick Malthouse would go back to the White Australia policy. I thought it was an absolute disgusting thing to say about someone who's had a long and proud history of dealing with Indigenous footballers. But David Koch made him a total fool of himself by saying that. Mind you, it's not the first time he's done it.
No, the pressure's always been on Ken Hinckley, hasn't it? But I think it might be David Koch, whose time is close to up at Port Adelaide as well. He's been there a long time. They made that one preliminary final, but you'd have to say equalisation's probably the main reason they're financial rather than experiments like China.
I agree with you, Mick. What are they? 7 years under David Koch, started in 2013. I think it was 2014 they finished third. They've missed the finals 4 times in those 7 years and made the top four once in their grand final. David Koch was their chairman. He's had a charm run, but the pressure should be squarely on him after yet another example of bloody foot in mouth. the highest order. He's had a lot of them.
What about the money side of things, Mick? I mean, China obviously is completely off the cards just from a travel point of view. I don't think we're going to see our borders open until there's a vaccine at the very least, and let alone, you know, shipping two clubs over there to play a game. But if they weren't to go back there, I mean, he talks about the fact that China allows them to fund their football department and how big it's been, the strategy that they use over there at the Power, and how big that money is for them. If they weren't to go back, I mean, you talk about clubs already being millions of dollars in the hole just from coronavirus alone, but to lose that too, I mean, how far would it set them back?
Well, ask Channel 7 or Foxtel, who have to go to China to produce the game. That's $500,000 cost for them. That's not happening. That's the end of the story right there. Whether Port Adelaide want to go or not, you're not going to be sending a TV crew to China again in our lifetime. That game is off. It's over.
There you go.
Regardless of the reasons that Mick Malthouse said.
Well, I mean, it's common sense. I mean, the punters out there think, well, A, they were sus on it anyway. B, what's happened in the world? Why? I mean, we all know it's not going to happen.
Those Suns Port games are incredible.
Yeah, they were. They were very poor. Very poor. It's look, good on Port for trying. They might have got a couple little sponsorships somewhere. I know Lauren enjoyed her time there as a junket, but. No one, like you said, I mean, no punter out there, no punter out there thinks this game's going to continue, so it's a non-issue. It'll just disappear.
I'll tell you what, Scotty, I wasn't enjoying it at about 5 a.m. on the day of the game when I woke up in a cold sweat and feared that I might have caught the gastro bug that all the St Kilda players had. I tell you, that 15 minutes of fear of this is it. This is it was in
the long
time. Yeah, it was a very, very nervous few hours, but got through unscathed. Yeah, interesting experience, but not one I'm sure I'd be rushing back for. But, no, I think it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall when David Koch crosses paths with Eddie Maguire, at the very least, at the next chairman's meeting, Mick, that's for sure.
Why is that?
Oh, well, Eddie hit out very, very hard yesterday morning on Monday morning radio at David Koch, and absolutely delivered him one squarely between the eyes. So I think there would have been a phone call somewhere along the line, whether it was Eddie, Koshy, Mick. There's has to have been some communication there, you would have to think, of the way that's played out. But anyway, we'll get back to the footy. We spoke about how footy might look. We're looking at teams potentially being back training by Monday. Mick, if, as you say, the South Australian government can get on board and allow that exemption. I know the Melbourne teams are really hoping that that's going to look like. But there's sort of the flow-on effects too to lower grades of footy, Ando. We've had a report on Tuesday morning.
Whose dog is that?
Email has, I think that might be Scotty's pooch down at the Surf Coast. He's getting pretty excited there, the little fella. Ando, we're just saying about lower levels of footy report this morning that an email has gone out to players informing them that no AFL player will be allowed to play in state leagues this year. We know you had some news last week about the VFL and how that could potentially look with standalone clubs, but these effects on the national level of the elite competition, it's not the only game affected, is it? This sort of flows right down to the Oval down the road.
Yeah, I don't know what the numbers was. I think it's probably something like 50,000 registered footballers who aren't involved. This is in Victoria, and maybe 15,000 of those play in the amateurs. The amateurs might be where Scotty played footy and Mick played footy. Scott with University Blacks and Mick with the Pirates. Mick, of course, was rubbed out for a cowardly king hit late in his career. He belted an old Geelong player and got 4 weeks, should have been eight, looking back on it. That's a trial by video, I think.
For Mick and that might be an interview for next week.
Well, it could be. Yeah, it's not a bad. I'm not going to do that. I'll try and find the bloke and see if he can get his side of the story. now, with those, so I desperately, like everyone, want to see suburban and country footy play. But the longer it goes on, you're not going to have crowds at AFL games before September. So unless there's an exclusion clause where you can get up to, say, 200 people after July 1st going to a game, and that's unlikely right at the moment with what Daniel Andrews has said, suburban footy isn't going to happen, country footy isn't going to happen, amateurs, not sure. They're in a different situation because they don't have to pay players, obviously. They still have running costs. and they still would like to have their bar open and be able to have lunches and the rest of it. But they maybe have a chance. What could happen then with the amateurs is players from suburban and country who want to have a game of football might try and become registered as amateur footballers, which is pretty easily done. And the amateurs, you could have a club picking up five really good players for the last nine games of their season, which is what they would play in July and August. So the MOs are aware of that as well. But at the moment, it isn't. I don't want to be a prophet of doom, but it's not looking great for suburban and country football, sadly. The VFL is a different scenario. Their communication with the AFL is positive, but who knows what it's going to look like in terms of what actual teams will be playing, because that seems to change almost daily. Some teams don't have the money to be able to pay for players. A club like Port Melbourne, they could, even without crowds. They have a war chest of, my understanding, is around $500,000 through a sponsorship with the CFMMU, and that would be able to get them through. So wait for more on that. I'll give you some more on Sunday in the Sunday Herald Sun.
Just on local footy, Ando, I think that once this is all flushed through, this is a great opportunity for country footy, suburban footy, the amateurs, all the footy leagues to break ties with the AFL. The AFL should run the AFL like they do the English Premier League, and you have a separate body funded by the government initially if it needs to be, so that all these country clubs, so let's face it, they've had a gutful of the AFL administration being involved in the administration of their local games, of their competitions, and the AFL can run the AFL. And all the other comps, like the olden days, not that long ago even, can look after themselves as long as there's government support, because too many local clubs have told me how disappointed they are at the interference from head office in the administration of their game.
Yeah, I hear you, Megan. That's they'd look no further than a club like Cerrito, where Bernie Barmer's the president down there, and he's been really vocal in what's taken place over the last 3 or 4 years, and that's anger is directed towards AFL. But to do what you're saying would require financial assistance from the government, and I'm not sure that would be forthcoming.
Well, I think it would, because it's the Australian game, and it's such an important part of our communities. They've already put money into they put $500 million into the local footy, which the AFL is going to spend. But I'm saying, let's cut out the AFL. They can run the elite competition and everyone else can look after themselves with support.
Yeah, well, I think you'll have support, put it that way, from those particular country, suburban and amateur leagues, but at the moment they're beholden to the AFL, so they won't be coming out publicly and saying that.
No.
Mick, one place where it looks like there's not going to be a hell of a lot of money compared to recent years is the coach's box. It's sort of coming a little bit more to light today. We knew that the cuts were coming to footy departments and particularly on the cash front, but news today has been conveyed to clubs that they've got to drop footy department spending by 40% to around about 430,000. A headcount on staff, so 24 staff members max, including a doctor, a psych and a player welfare person. How do you reckon that's going to go down?
Well, I understand the urgency for this year that we're all going to have those, you know, a headcount, et cetera, per club. But going forward, we can't allow this system to last for 4 or 5 years so that every club is pushed right down to the same level. We've got to encourage growth straight away. So I'm concerned about what that will do to the game if we make everyone destitute.
There you go, Scotty. He's
That's
really
a very good point.
He is worried about his Tigers, and the Tigers have been pretty vocal. Benny Gale spoke on Monday night that they've expressed their disappointment to the AFL about the cost cutting. And someone that I spoke to at a club this morning was absolutely furious about it and said that, well, if you have half the spend, expect half the product.
So the development of players, is that what it all gets down to? That's what the clubs are saying. We won't develop as quickly or as good players. So there's the spectacle, the excitement of the game. It all flows on from there.
Well, that's what Richmond is saying. Yeah, Richmond are suggesting along those lines that, you know, your Sydney Stacks, your Marlon Pickett's, these incredible stories. Shea Bolton, you know, Ivan Soldo as well is another one that these development players that you put a few years into that have incredible flow-on effects too into, you know, regional communities and family networks. To have those inspirational stories will just be completely lost.
Well, clubs will be reticent to take the risk, won't they? That's the thing. It takes the risk out of football.
When you talk about these coaches and what do they do and what's the need for them, well, they would say the need for them is that the skills of under-18 players coming into the competition aren't good enough for the demands of today's super quick, super hard tackling game. And it's never been harder for a player with the ball in hands. We all appreciate that. And they're expected to hit targets from 40 metres away with two or three players in their face. And what they're asked to do is extreme. So if that's happening at under 18 and they're not skilled enough, and when we're talking about skills, we're primarily talking about decision-making, which is a head thing, and some people will never have that, but certainly by foot and by hand. So you blokes both kick it, and I haven't seen you kick a footy, guys, but I reckon you'd be okay. But Scotty and Mick could both kick a football, and presumably you learnt that, and you learn how to kick a footy basically when you're 5, 6, 7 years old. And it depends on, that can be luck on the person who teaches you. And that's where it all begins, and that's the biggest problem in football, that the really young coaching, often the father teaches his kid or the mother teaches the kid how to kick footy, and they can't kick the ball really well themselves. So that's ingrained, and it's very hard to reteach someone to kick a football after they're about 15 years old. And it should be younger, and you can say, well, when's too young? But we start playing footy at under nines. I reckon Oz kick starts about age 5. And you go down to any Oz kick you want to go to, and you haven't seen it this year, sadly, but last year, and half the kids can't kick, or more than half of them can't kick, and that'll stay the same for all their careers. And it should be more focus put on young, when they first learn to kick, and I'm really strong on this, and Brian Taylor's another one who shares my view, teach them right from the start. And someone should set up an institute where you can take your kid, not to Oz kick, but somewhere where they've specifically taught how to kick a football.
And just back on the footy departments, Lauren, where they're saying it's 20, capped at 24, why should it be capped? Why can't they just say you've got $7 million and spend it how you want? So if the average wage in the footy department is $250,000, then let it drop to $175,000. I'm sure people would be happy to take a pay cut and see the development coach or their mate just completely disappear and they keep the same wage.
But haven't footy chiefs been involved in all this to a degree? So is the fact we're trimming, you know, the three analysts of the, you know, stats, Pete? I mean, we all accept that there was too much fat, don't we?
Yeah,
we're not talking about development coaches. There was too much fat.
Yeah. No, that is true. But a strict head count, I agree with that. I think you should be able to spend your money at your discretion, and if you think that you can get an edge with your development program, then you should be allowed to
put it all in there. Yep.
Well, yeah, if you want to hire three young blokes or hire Mick Malthouse,
exactly. Yeah, totally.
Well, another area that where there's sort of a big cash focus, Mick. I saw your story last week regarding the broadcast rights and that absolute belter on the weekend about Eddie and Tim Lane. Thoroughly enjoyed that one. So keen to hear if you had much feedback on that, but. What about the broadcast front? Obviously, we know that that's going to be cut. But are we going to see sort of new players on the scene on this front, or are you in the camp of expecting the deal to be extended?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that Channel 9 would be able. They're about to do a new rugby deal. Channel 10 aren't going to be. They've got an American owner, Xander. You might know a bit more about that, but I don't think they're involved. I don't think Google, Facebook and Amazon are currently in a position to do it. So it'll be the status quo. It will be extended, but I don't think there's any urgency. The main urgency is how much money the TV broadcast is going to pay the AFL this year. That's the key. You know, what percentage of the $418 million that they're owed the AFL will they get?
So even if every game gets shown... Even if they get the full, you know, remainder of the fixture away, I know games have been cut, but you reckon broadcasters will still come, not cap in hand, it's sort of the other way around, but only offering a portion of the...
Well, they've only been given 17 of 23 weeks of home and away for a start, yep. So I don't know what that's worth. I was never good at maths, but it's plenty.
Tell me more about your teachers, given my dad taught you maths at primary school.
I do blame Alan Wood.
Big Al.
But absolutely.
I didn't know this. Can we revisit this? What grade? I'm sure he was an outstanding. Oh, he would have started to get loose by then, Loz. What's Al say about Mike?
Well, he taught me in grade 6 and Mick in grade 5. So
we found the problem.
It probably, set us on the path to here where we are today. So I don't know who that says more about, but there you go. Mick, just tell us a little bit about the Eddie and Tim Lane piece, because I really enjoyed it. Scotty, I'm sure you did too. And it's just one of those ones that you sit down with a cup of coffee and read every word. Did you have much of a response?
Yeah, well, we're all doing these rewind projects at the moment where once a week we've got to find a photo and talk about that for the paper. And I always remembered the big blue between Tim Lane and Eddie from 2002. And we had the photo and I rang Tim to just do the rewind. And the story was so captivating and I'd forgotten a lot of the detail that it became a bit more than it was a rewind on steroids. And, you know, Tim was right because Eddie's not long after stopped calling Collingwood games. And I love the fact that an RMIT researcher did a huge project into whether Eddie's calling was biased or not in 2004, which, you know, Eddie said it wasn't, but others would disagree.
Eddie's calling biased. Eddie, I was two years ago, went to Vegas, as you three know, they watched Terence Crawford fight Jeff Horn. Ed arrived over there on the Friday. The fight was on the Saturday night. To his credit, he didn't go and have a sleep or anything like that. He was up for the fight, went to the conference, then took us out for dinner that night. And there was about 8 or 9 of us for dinner and kindly paid for the entire meal. Nope. Only if we all agreed to sing the Collingwood theme song. So we had to get up this restaurant in Vegas and sing the man, good old Collingwood forever. So I did it with some hand movements alongside when we were singing it. But yeah, so I reckon Ed, when he calls a Collingwood game, there's a fair chance. Was it RMIT you said, Mick? They did.
Yeah, yeah. Had the sorest head, Jeff Horn or yourself, when you woke up?
probably me, actually. Jeff Horn got out of it fairly well. Mine was a bit heavy, but I remember waking up on the Sunday morning in Vegas and bumped into Paul Kent, who's a Daily Telegraph sports writer, and Kent was still dressed up in his black tie, which he'd worn the night before with his commentary duties with Eddie and Barry Michael. I said, mate, don't you get changed? He said, I'm going to a wedding. Do you want to come? And I said, I don't know the person. He said, well, I thought going to a Vegas chapel sounds pretty good, one of those Elvis type places.
Oh, yeah. So
he was going to the wedding of the Raging Bull, Gordon Tallis, who was a wonderful league player from Queensland. Gordy had on a whim proposed to his girlfriend over there, and Paul was best man, I think. And I couldn't go to it because I had to do some bloody work. But I'm really one of my great regrets in life, actually. But we're getting off the track here a little bit, Loz. Just on Mick Warner, when you're talking about your dad teaching him at school, I've actually seen one of Mick Warner's school reports, which he doesn't know. He had it sitting at his desk one day, and I oversaw it. And it was Form 4. It said, Mick has developed a rebellious nature of late, has a distinct cheekiness, and is potentially dangerous around the Bunsen burner in science class.
Well, that just goes to the podcast. We got Jeff Horn, we got Gordon Tallis's Elvis weddings, and we got Mick Warner's school reports from Form 4. So, you know, we're going to you just never know what you're going to get, do you? That's fantastic. Now, we'll get to your Melbourne's best team of the last half century, Ando, very, very shortly. But one of our favourites here at the Herald Sun Footy podcast, Scotty, our man down on the Surf Coast and the chief of the Super Score, it is none other than the Whisper. What have you got for us?
The Whisper, well, it's a positive one, which is rare for me. As we know, Easton Wood, the premiership captain for the Western Bulldogs, had lost his medal a couple of weeks ago, had a very, you know, terrible time, robbery of his house and with his partner. And it he's got some better news. Apparently, they're expecting their second child together. So, something to brighten up. They still, I don't think he's still got his medal back or anything like that, but some good news after a bit of a rough trot for Eastern Wood.
Oh, that's very fantastic news, Scotty. Congratulations to the Woods.
Did I mention it was a 2016 Premiership captain? I did mention that, didn't I?
How many times have you watched that again while you've been in isolation, Scotty?
Oh, no, I'm just keep watching the replay of that. That's all I need to watch.
Fantastic. We did have another contribution for the week. We're going to go double whisper. An injury-plagued Carlton forward may have been training deep in enemy territory and was spotted at Victoria Park, no less, kicking for goal. So, I mean, 20, 30 years ago, if you were a Carlton player, you probably wouldn't even want to be setting foot in Victoria Park. But it seems that a big Carlton forward is
It's not Charlie Kerno, as we know.
He's not doing anything. No, and I know we promised Ed Kerno this week, but that may be pushed back at this stage. Don't know if he was listening last week and might have been a little bit worried that we were going to hit him up a bit too hard about his brother. But no, we understand Ed will be joining us next week, so make sure you tune in. If you're a Blues fan, we'll have plenty for you. You're sampling the best. Better than all the rest. It's a grand old flag. It's a high-flying flag. It's the emblem for me and for you. It's the emblem of the team we love. The team of the red and the blue. Every heart beats true for sing this song to you. Should all acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the red and the blue. Ando, it's Demon time this week, your best of the best series. We've been tracking each and every week the best teams from 1970 to 2020. And you've looked to the red and the blue this week. Take us through your team.
I've done a few of these losses, you know, and this is easily the hardest one. The better the team.
Oh, I feel like you've said that every week.
No. Hawthorn last week was, you know, Ayres, Moore, Langford, and Knights, Mew, Hodge. That is easy. Pick themselves.
And there's more names in contention here than there is in the actual team.
Exactly right, Scotty. And I've got a couple of Brownlow medalists. I've got some mates who barracked in Melbourne, so I went to them and said, pick your best things. And eight different people. And they all came up with very different sides, which just tells you that they haven't been a great side. That's the bottom line. What have they made? Two grand finals in that time? 1988. And look, just about every position. But here we go. Back pocket, Laurie Fowler, what have you, won three best and fairest. But I'm very big on kicking the ball really well, as you might have gathered early on. And I love blokes who can make the decisions and use the ball properly. So Alan Johnson in a back pocket. He also played wing. He won two BNFs. Beautiful kick of the footy. Really good player, Alan Johnson. Sean White. I think if Sean White had been born in Australia and grew up with AFL, he would be a genuine superstar of the card. He was a brilliant footballer, the late Sean White. I loved Earl Sporting as a player. He went to Charlton later on, and David Parkin turned him into a centre-half-4, but he was really good in their good years in the 80s, a centre-half back or third tall back pocket. Brett Lovett just picks himself. Outstanding footy brain, Brett Lovett. Loved him as a player. Gary Hardiman, reckon top three in a couple of Brownlows, all Australian centre-half back, real dasher. Adam Ouse on a half-back flank. Talk about kicking the ball properly and being a smart footballer. Ouse with all of those things. The centre line is the one that everyone had the same centre line. Stan Owls, of course, went on to North Melbourne, played in Premiership. Greg Wells went on to Carlton and played in the Premiership. Rob Flower didn't go anywhere, just remained red and blue all through his life. But the late Rob Flower, half-forward line, Gary Lyon has to be there somewhere. I've got him in a half-forward flank. The Ox, David Schwartz, centre-half-forward. I think was almost Wayne Carey like David Schwartz. He's 1994 season before he did his first knee. So he was just going to be absolutely anything. Came back, still won a BNF. Brian Wilson, some wouldn't have him. The view on Brian Wilson is, he could at times be a little bit selfish, but he was a very clever player, Brian Wilson. I got him in a half forward flank, changing onto the ball. Jeff Farmer, forward pocket. The Whiz picked himself. He had a 70 goal season there. Love watching him play. David Neitz, full forward. Gives you that versatility. We've also been able to go back to centre-half back. Alan Jakovic, some wouldn't have, but I was watching some highlights of him yesterday on Fox Footy. I think Gary Lyon was commentating on it. And he was something else, Alan Jakovic. He played a little bit like Gary Ablett Sr. so quick, not tall, but Cronky was a footballer. Jim Stein's in the ruck. Jared Healy, Jared Healy, ruck rover all day long. Todd Viney's my rover on baller. Max Gorn on the interchange, changing with Jimmy Stein's. Nathan Jones, Jonesy's sort of thereabouts somewhere, just a really honest player. Clayton Oliver, I've gone Clayton Ooh. Oliver, a few of some other blokes, and Brad Green, who's a really versatile footballer. But as you said, boys, there's James McDonald. Peter Moore, I didn't pick in. Peter Moore had one brilliant year with Melbourne, having won a Brownlow Collingwood. Shane Way Woden, the same thing, had probably two or three good years. Stephen Chingo would have made it, but for injury. Stephen Phoebe, Russell Robertson, Stephen Smith, Cameron Bruce, Aaron Davey, Andrew Opps, a really good player for them, James McDonald, Stephen Nick, Danny Hughes, Greg Healy. A lot of good players, but absolute champions, not that many at Melbourne, hence why they haven't won a premiership.
Clayton Oliver, yeah, it's a big rap for him, Ando.
Yeah, I thought he just needs to improve his kicking, probably, Scotty. His hands are brilliant. Wins the ball. He's won a couple of BNFs already. You might be a bit early, but some of those other blokes, I think his optimum levels is better than some of the ones he's competing with. And I think you'd have him ahead of some of those guys, like a James McDonald, just a heart and soul player.
Yeah.
Or Stephen Phoebe, really good footballers. But I think this bloke might have a bit on them.
I heard a good story about Clayton Oliver. I don't know if it's true, but I'll tell it anyway. After he was drafted, he ran into Luke Hodge in a pub and said, "I'm looking forward to playing against you next year." And Hodge said, "Well, I don't play in the VFL, mate." who would be your best coach? Who would be your best coach, Ando?
Yeah, John Northey would be a standout coach for me. John Northey was really us against them type of coach. But when Northey came on, Greg Healy was a captain and then Gary Lyon. Under Northey, they finished third, second, fourth. So it was a pretty rarefied air for Melbourne in the late 80s, early 90s. So, yeah, it's definitely John Swoop and Northey.
And we could never understand why Northey went. He left Richmond. He went, was it 95? They made it a prelim and he left.
Yeah, that was a bad call. It didn't work out at all, did it? I was just thinking... Yeah, he pulled the wrong rein there. My captain of that side, probably Gary Lyon. I think Gary Lyon was a very demanding captain, but the blokes who played only thought that he set a level of professionalism on field. That was their most successful time. So I'd go with G Lyon as their skipper.
He'll be dirty. He's on the half forward flank, though, I'll tell you that.
Not in a half forward. I reckon Gary in Melbourne's best side would be a half forward flanker because he's not David Swart's size, is he, in terms of set up or David Neitz, but he's smooth footballer, Gary Lyon.
Well played, Ando. As you say, it wasn't an easy task. Who have you got next week?
That'll be the Kangaroos, North Melbourne.
That'll be a bit easier.
Yeah, they've got those great years, haven't they, the 70s and 90s. I'll fit that. I know that a bloke called Wayne Carey will be a centre forward, so I've made that tough decision already.
That's
cool. Write that in the permanent marker and put the rest in pencil around him, I would imagine. But Melbourne fans, I've just been advised too that our friends over at the acclaimed Sacked podcast have got a former Melbourne player on this week's edition, and someone who has had a very early listen to this week's Sacked has described it as legit next level. So it
was
sounds
that Ralphie
like,
or Glenn?
No, it was not.
It would have been Glenn, I'd suspect.
It was neither of the protagonists, actually. This was an impartial third party who's listened to this week's edition with a former Melbourne player. So that'll be dropping late on Friday.
Yeah, Loz, I've heard a bit of this. And
who is it? Are we allowed to tell me who it is?
Late Friday, that one will be dropping. But, boys, you are relieved of your duties until this time next Tuesday, which I suppose hopefully we're sitting here next week and teams are training in the suburbs all around us. And
we'll be live at training sessions, Loz, with the phone over the fence.
I don't know if we'll be allowed within a 10K radius of a training facility by the sounds because of biosecurity, that's right. It will be all over what they're doing. You can take care of the Surf Coast June runs if we'll leave those ones to you down your way, Scotty. But, boys, of course, you can keep up with everything at heraldsun.com.au and in the Herald Sun each and every day. We'll see you there and we'll see you here next week.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.